Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
All right, we're back after a couple-week break. I went on vacation. Picked a bad week to not watch the Bills game, Nate.
Yeah, you did. And it was actually the first time in a couple weeks I've been able to watch the entire game. And it didn't disappoint me. I mean, I guess it depends on how you're watching the game, because it did hurt their draft pick potential for next year. But as a Bill, I mean, that was just the most fun I've had, I think, watching a Bills game all year. I think I had more fun watching that game than I did watching the Vikings game.
Yeah, I don't know about the Vikings game, just because they got destroyed those first 2 weeks, and everyone thought the Bills were going to have the first pick. And then they just went out there and steamrolled the Vikings in Minnesota, who, you know, are still considered probably a Super Bowl contender. But yeah, I went back and watched the condensed film of this game before the pod here, Nate, and it just looked, I don't know, it was like a switch flipped again, and all of a sudden the offense remembered how to play football, and that's something they didn't do against the Bears. And, you know, we'll touch on that game just a little bit, because there's not much to take from it other than the Bears defense is really good. The Bills defense was all right to above average in that game, and the offense was just terrible. So it was good to see them turn it around against the Jets.
Yeah, and I think the big difference on offense, at least, was a competent quarterback. Like, you saw what even a competent quarterback can do for the worst offense in the NFL. It makes them not that terrible. Like, I'm not going to go out here and say the Bills' offense is great or anything, but it makes them not embarrassing. They scored 41 points against a defense that was considered to be pretty good. And that really, for me, comes mainly from the quarterback position.
Yeah, Nate, I mean, what was it two weeks ago when Nick Mullins went off in his first career start? I think probably both of us said, how can every other team in the NFL find a random guy that just goes out and throws for 250 and two touchdowns? And the Bills couldn't do it, and they finally found one. I mean, Matt Barkley hasn't played an NFL game in a while, and you know, he looked the part. I mean, he made some turnover-worthy throws. There's no disputing that. I mean, I'm not going to say that Matt Barkley should be the starter the rest of the year. It's, you know, but it was nice to see competence.
Yeah, I mean, he made two throws that maybe could have been intercepted. One of them probably should have been intercepted. The other one was more iffy. But even withstanding that, I mean, pretty good performance from a guy who had all of six or seven practices with the team and hadn't played a football game since January of 2016.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, January 2016. It was January 1st, 2016. Think about that.
Yeah.
And he's still capable of not looking bad. And I think that also goes to show Bills fans, at least, just how bad Nathan Peterman is or was now.
Yeah, and I think it's a combination of two things with Barkley's performance Sunday night. One is, he didn't just completely shit himself in the first 2 seconds when there was any sort of pressure near him in the pocket. And two, he can maneuver in the pocket to avoid that pressure if it's there. And I think, you know, that's the difference. Josh Allen just shits himself when pressure comes near him, and that's understandable. He's a rookie, but he has the athleticism to get away. Derek Anderson can't get out of his own way, even though he doesn't shit himself under pressure. And Nathan Peterman's just not athletic and, you know, shat himself under pressure as well. So I think it was nice to see a guy that has just enough athleticism to move out of the way and, you know, the wherewithal to keep his eyes downfield and find a receiver instead of just run around aimlessly.
Yeah, and I think this helps the Bills in such a huge way. It basically, it allowed them to cut Nathan Peterman, which you cannot. The Bills were not going to cut Peterman until they had three quarterbacks they thought were better than him, and they have that now. And it also gives the Bills what they really needed in their locker room to begin with, which is a couple of veteran guys to help their number seven draft pick, their franchise quarterback, develop. And now he has that. And I think Barkley, with his performance on Sunday, has really, in my mind, earned the opportunity to be the long-term backup here to Josh Allen in Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, he looked pretty good. There's no disputing that. You know, he doesn't have the physical traits that Josh Allen does, and not many guys do. You know, maybe half the starting quarterbacks in the NFL do, and probably not any of the backups. So if Matt Barkley can kind of teach Josh Allen those, you know, intangible things like staying in the pocket, keeping your eyes downfield, understand what the defense is trying to do to you in the pre-snap reads, that's the type of stuff that can help Josh Allen elevate his game from, you know, just kind of a mediocre quarterback to a guy that could be really, really good.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to see Josh Allen play again, because I'm sure he's grown a ton in the time since he's got hurt and he's missed all these games. And he's had a lot of time to watch first Derek Anderson and then Matt Barkley, just the way they conduct themselves on a game week, the way they prepare, and the way they go out and the way they play, and the way they conduct themselves on the field. And I think I'd hope he's been able to learn a lot from that. And that's why I'm really excited to see him play again. And I'm hoping that he's healthy, and it sounds like he's going to be healthy enough to play against Jacksonville coming off the bye week.
Yeah, and Josh Allen, you know, being the starting quarterback, is the only thing that's going to put people in the stands here. And I think they have 4 home games left, Nate. Is that right?
Yeah, Jags, Jets, Dolphins, and...
Lions, I think.
Lions, yes. Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, I know I don't really have much desire to go to the games unless Josh Allen is starting. I mean, I'm not going to make the trip from Albany out to Buffalo to go watch Matt Barkley, Nathan Peterman, Derek Anderson play quarterback when they're 3-7 and not in the playoff hunt. You know what I mean? So it'll be good to see what Josh Allen can do if he takes any, you know, leaps here in the second half of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think, where the Bills are record-wise is good for Josh Allen's development. And he's really going to be in a position now where he has these last 6 games of the season to go out and play with pretty much no pressure and show all the things he's learned and improved on the first 10 weeks of the year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he plays. You know, he was a guy that played with confidence from the get-go. You know, confidence in his physical tools, not so much in, you know, his ability to stay in the pocket and the mental part of the game. So I'm curious to see if that 3-7 record helps him be a bit looser with that and, you know, willing to be a little bit more patient and stand in there, you know, and deliver a throw and take a hit, which he did the last time he played on the field. It was the play he got hurt on.
Yeah, and I think it will. He's only going to get better. How much better is up for debate still. We have to kind of see that. But he's only going to get better as time goes on, especially as a rookie. And so all I'm looking for each week from him going forward is just seeing that he's doing something better than he was doing before. Because there's a lot of little things that we see that he needs to improve on. And just seeing him hit, you know, a couple of those at a time would be fantastic.
Yeah, and one of the biggest things for me is probably going to be footwork. One, both maneuvering in the pocket and, you know, setting himself up for throws. That's something that's kind of bothered me, even in the pre-draft process now. Hopefully he can start to fix that. And, you know, that's probably the biggest thing for me. What else do you want to see him improve on, Nate?
I want to see him improve on his decision-making. That's the number one thing I want to see him improve on, being able to make decisions faster. I'm looking for most improvement on his mental side of the game, because his physical tools are, most of those are there. And he does, yes, like you said, he needs to improve on some of his footwork, getting himself, especially his shoulders, going in the right direction. But he's got the arm to basically make those throws without the greatest mechanics, and I really want to see him improve the mental side of his game.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's definitely the most important thing. And then the footwork. So we've got a long time the rest of the season to talk about Josh Allen. I do want to talk about how good Zay Jones has been the last couple weeks. Again, you know, I think it started week 3 or 4, Nate, where we said, you know, this is the best player on the offense so far in Zay Jones. And finally, it's showing up in the box score because he had a quarterback competent enough to get him the ball when he's wide open.
Yeah, I mean, if you've been watching the tape and, like, we've been watching every single week, Zay Jones is open a lot. A lot of the time when he runs routes, he's going to be open. He's open all the time. And we saw how open he is when Matt Barkley's playing quarterback. He was thrown to 11 times, caught 8 of those, and one of the other ones was not a catchable ball at all. And so, I mean, that's about as good of a day as you're going to have as a wide receiver. He caught everything that was thrown his direction that he had a reasonable chance of making a play on. And hopefully Josh Allen saw that. And when he comes back, he's like, oh, this guy's probably going to be open a lot. Let's look at his way.
Yeah, and the one play that really caught my attention was the touchdown. And it's not just the catch that he made in traffic. It was the move he made on, you know, just that little stutter step to go to the inside to get himself open. He was completely covered. And then as soon as he made that one little, you know, head bob at the guy and took a step in, he was open by a yard and a half, 2 yards, and ended up kind of being a broken play after that. But had Matt Barkley didn't have pressure in his face right away, Zay Jones was wide open coming out of his break on that route.
Yeah, and it's not just getting open he's gotten better. I mean, he's gotten better at pretty much everything. The touchdown run, LeSean McCoy's first touchdown run,
oh yeah,
was 90% Zay Jones' block. That was just he sealed off the edge so well, and it's not something you've normally been seeing him do. I mean, he's big enough to make those blocks. Certainly big enough to make those blocks, and to see him get better at that side of his. I mean, he right now is the Bills' best receiver, and we're seeing why the Bills drafted him in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, last year was quite terrible, to be honest, the first half of the season, but he's improved a ton this year, and you know, this is a guy you can build an offense around if you get, you know, a 1A wide receiver and a 1B to put on the outside and have him work exclusively out of the slot, because that's where he's his best. You know, he's been doing okay when he's put outside, but kick him inside. And slot receivers, you know, are kind of dominant now anyway. Look at, like, Adam Thielen. That's the kind of potential you have with slot receivers in the NFL if they can get the type of separation that Zay Jones is able to. And like you said, Nate, he's run blocking well. People forget he's a bigger guy. He's 6'2", 200. I mean, that's not small.
No, it's not at all. And that's a good point with Adam Thielen, who is one of the best receivers in the NFL this year. Certainly, I mean, certainly one of the best 5 receivers in the NFL right now. And he pretty much exclusively plays in the slot. Like, what do you have, like 800-yard games in a row to start the season or something? Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane how good that guy is.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of, I don't know if you'd necessarily call them number one options, but at least the most productive options in NFL offenses coming out of the slot now with Thielen. I mean, Emmanuel Sanders has been a guy like that most of his career. Doug Baldwin's a primary slot guy. There's not a lot of good slot cornerbacks. So a lot of times you can get matched up with one of them or a linebacker or just be kind of go sit in the open spaces of his own. And Zay Jones is a guy that can just be a perfect, like, security blanket for Josh Allen for probably the next 5 or 6 years at least.
Yeah, absolutely. And you need all the great teams, the teams that win these Super Bowls, they have a guy that fills that slot role. And, like, the Eagles last year won the Super Bowl, Nelson Agholor, Danny Amendola for the Patriots, and Edelman for the Patriots. The Rams now have, well, they had Cooper Kupp. I don't know what they're going to do now. Robert Woods can maybe fill that role. These great offenses have guys that are really good in the slot.
Yeah, so I don't know if there's anything else you want to touch on the offense, Nate. I will say the play calling was great against the Jets, and I can't really evaluate the play calling against the Bears because Nathan Peterman's not capable of throwing the ball further than a few yards down the field. But I have nothing else to add to the offense unless you do.
No, I think I'm all good on the offense. Speaking of the defense, though, are they number one in yards now?
Yep, number one in total defense, that being yards allowed per game.
Like, no, that's not all. That's not the greatest measure of defense, but it's one of them. We have to at least put that caveat out there. Now, there's I can think of a few reasons why their number might be lower than some other teams just because of how bad the offense is. But, I mean, that's still really impressive.
Yeah. I mean, the offense has given the defense a lot of short fields, and that can contribute to that, you know, best yards per game in the league, which might be a touch misleading, like you were alluding to there, Nate. But I still think they're probably a top five, top seven defense overall.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, certainly, I certainly think they're a top five defense. I think that I was just making the point that we can't go out there and say Buffalo's the best defense in the NFL because they lead the league in yards allowed per game. Because that doesn't equate to being great on defense.
Right, right. Absolutely. And, you know, there's still holes on this defense. I mean, there's kind of been a revolving door at cornerback, too. We've talked about this, you know, since they didn't bring E.J. Gaines back last year, I think right when we first started the pod, that that's a position they need to address still. And Levi Wallace was fine on Sunday. He made a couple of good plays. I'll have to see him against a good offense, a good quarterback, and see what he does against that. Because that cornerback two spot's just been targeted relentlessly by opposing offenses. And I don't know, maybe Levi Wallace is the answer there. He kind of fits that mold of zone corner with long arms that McDermott kind of covets for that second spot.
Yeah, and he played every single snap against the Jets.
The only player to do that, right?
Only player to do that. Yeah, only player to play every single snap. So, I mean, they clearly believe in him and think he's good. They wouldn't have kept him on their practice squad, brought him up. And we've seen the Bills just generally going younger as the season goes on. They're playing the young guys everywhere. Like good. Wyatt Teller on the offensive line. Harrison Phillips getting a lot more snaps on the defensive line. Levi Wallace, Deron Johnson playing almost every single snap when he's been healthy. That's great, I think, for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was one of the oldest rosters in the NFL last year. And I think they're close to middle of the pack, at least with their opening 53-man roster. So it's great to see them go younger because, I don't know, there's not many good veterans on this team to make it worth having an old roster. And as we've talked about before, a lot of the best teams have, you know, a dozen undrafted free agents on their roster. And it helps with salary cap, and it helps just to have youth in the sport. And football wears you down.
Yeah, it absolutely does. It absolutely does. And you can't, like, the Bills, so that after the 53-man roster cuts this year, the Bills were the fifth oldest team in the NFL.
Wow.
At the average age of 26.7. And while we're talking here, I'm going to figure out what they are now, and we'll see how much lower it's gotten, because I think it's a decent amount lower now than it was after the 53-man cutdowns.
I mean, it has to be, just with some of the guys they've shed over the course of the season. They've got to be at least, you know, on average a year younger, I would think.
Well, we're going to find out in a few minutes here, but that is, so we will see. I would think they're probably a full year younger, at least. I don't know about more than that, but because to be the middle of the pack, I think they had to be about 24 years old on average.
Oh wow!
So it's gonna be a different. I don't think they're gonna get that low, but they definitely are younger. I mean,
yes.
I'm thinking about defense, like even thinking about the defense as we were just talking about. The core guys in this defense are pretty young. There's not, like, you could, they have a good young core on the defense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have Trey White, who's, I don't know, 23. Matt Milano's that age. Tremaine Edmonds is 20. It's crazy. And then you have Harrison Phillips as well. Levi Wallace is, you know, an undrafted guy straight out of college that's not very old. Some of the older guys are on that defensive line, which has just been playing out of its mind, and I'm glad to finally see that. And there's going to be some holes there. I mean, Kyle Williams is old. Jerry Hughes is still very good, but he's on the wrong side of 30 now. So, I don't know. That's something they have to think about going forwards in the draft and, you know, in free agency, since they have some money to burn. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, Nate, but a guy I have seen at the top potential free agents for next offseason Grady Jarrett, the defensive tackle from the Atlanta Falcons. I think he'd be a great fit, and I'd love to see him on the Bills.
Now, how old is he?
He is 25.
He's only 25 years old, really?
Yep, and he's going to be going into free agency for probably a huge contract, I would think, because he's a really good player.
Yeah, I was going to say I did not think that he was that young, but okay. All right. I mean, and the Bills do need to get younger at that position, certainly. I would certainly agree with that.
Yeah, and they love to cycle defensive tackles and defensive ends. You know, nobody really plays more than 65, 70% of the snaps at most. So he's the type of guy you can line up at defensive end, defensive tackle, kind of versatile. 6'1", 290. He's one of those smaller defensive tackles like Aaron Donald that kind of thrives off of the speed and agility more than, you know, kind of the old school, you know, kind of pot roast. Or was there a guy named Pot Roast?
Actually named Pot Roast? I don't know about
that. No. I'm thinking of the guy from, he played for Washington.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Shit. Terrence Knight. What was
it? Yeah.
Anyways, you get the point there.
Yeah.
The NFL is transitioning from those guys to the smaller, quicker guys.
All right, Alex. So I got the average age of the Bills' 53-man roster as of right now. How much lower do you think it got?
I'll go close to a year. It seems like they're maybe not the entire roster, but the guys they're playing are younger.
Yeah, I wish I will. Before our next pod, I will do it by snap count. But I don't have that in front of me right now. But just by the 53, the average age of the 53, it's 26.1. So it's lower than it was at the beginning of the year by over half a year. But it's not as much younger as I thought it would be. And I think that's a good point, Alex. I do think that if we do it by snap count, it would show it a little bit younger even than 26.1.
Yeah, I mean, plus you have to factor in that Derek Anderson's added into there, and he's like 35 or 36 years old.
Well, between him, Lorenzo Alexander, and Hauschka,
Kyle Williams,
they skew this so much. But hey, what can we do? I mean, if we just, like, those guys, they're all 35 years old.
Yeah, so the Bills need to start addressing, you know, those positions of free agency and the draft. You know, that's what it comes down to. But like you said, Nate, defense has a great young core. They're fun to watch, and hopefully next year the Bills will have a competent offense out there, and they'll be a contender.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this a lot at the beginning of the year, but we kind of see the Bills trying to do what the Rams did. They're doing it. They're not doing it exactly the same way, but the Rams went defense first, got a pretty good defense, fired everyone, which this is a step. That's a step I think the Bills are going to skip. They're not going to fire everyone at that point. And then they brought in this offensive guy who drafted a quarterback, and the rest is history. You see, one of the best teams in the NFL right now. Well, the Bills, they built the defense first, and now they got their quarterback, and now they just need to finish addressing the offense. And once they do that, I think you're right. I think we're very close to seeing them be a contender, at the very least, for a playoff spot, a consistent playoff contender.
Yeah, I think that's right, Nate. And is there anything else you want to touch on before we go into a listener question?
I really want to get into this listener question because it's a really interesting question, and I'm excited to talk about it a little bit here.
There is one thing I want to touch on first, and it's Nathan Peterman being cut. It just drives me insane going on Twitter and seeing people just shredding the guy after he's been cut. I just don't understand, like, the psychology of that. Like, what satisfaction do you get out of going online to just rip a dude who just lost his job and probably his career?
Yeah, like, how would you feel if you've gone out there on national TV and in front of 70,000 people live in front of you and messed up big time at your job 3 different times?
Yeah.
In a row. Not just over a few years, in a row, 3 times in a row, in your first ever job.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good. It can't feel good. And honestly, I just don't understand why people feel the need to do that. Like, yeah, he was really bad. he knows that. It's not like he's out there running his mouth saying he's good. Then it'd be a little bit different. But it's just like, you're some random person on the internet talking smack about Nathan Peterman, who made it to the NFL. All right? People saying all this crap about him. They're in the NFL. I just don't get the schadenfreude of making fun of a guy like that.
Yeah, I mean, I sincerely hope now, who knows what he's going to do with his life. Who knows if he plays football again, which I hope he does play football somewhere. Canada. I don't think he's good enough to play in the NFL, honestly. But who knows, maybe he can go to Canada and play or something if he wants to play football. But I hope the guy has a long career doing something. And he sounds like he loves football, so I'm sure he'd, you know, be fantastic coaching or doing anything like that, or stay around the game. But I really hope the guy has a long career. He just is not a good quarterback. And now that that's been realized and acted on, I think we just need to move on from that.
Yeah. That being said, from a football perspective, I am glad that the Bills finally moved on and ended that experiment, both for the team's sake and his sake. It drove me nuts they kept putting him in that position to go out there and fail. And, you know, by all accounts from the beat reporters, Nathan Peterman's a great guy, a friendly guy. So yeah, we wish him nothing but the best. But please, people, if you're one of them that just feels the need to destroy a guy on the internet, please stop. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, there's absolutely, and it's just crazy to me how vile some people are. Not just toward Nathan Peterman. This can be towards any professional athlete team when they mess up. Like, it is insane. Like, yes, we like these, we love these teams, we support these teams, we support these players, but we support these players whether or not they do well. Like, I was always rooting for Nathan Peterman. I wasn't coming out there saying, oh, I hope this guy messes up. He really sucks. What kind of a fan does that?
Yeah, and it's kind of the same thing with the Le'Veon Bell situation where people are like, oh, I hope he tears his ACL or whatever. It's like, why would you wish that upon the guy? Because you chose him in your fantasy draft and he didn't play? Like, it has so little material effect on your life. I just don't understand why people get so upset over.
I mean, Le'Veon's doing what's best for Le'Veon. And if you, at your job, if you're not trying to do what's best for yourself, you're not looking out for yourself first, that's just an interest. Like, most people do that. But then when it comes to a team sport, it's like it's not a job anymore. These guys aren't getting paid for it. They're supposed to sacrifice for the team, yada, yada, yada. But he's looking out for himself, and that's what he should be doing. And I think it is setting a very good precedent for, A, other players in the future that come into his same situation, and B, to the Players Association, to the next collective bargaining agreement, get rid of the franchise tag.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like what Le'Veon's done. He took 400 less hits to his body this year, sacrificed $15 million to probably go get, I don't know, 4 or 5 years at $15 million a year, maybe even $12 million a year. Regardless, he's guaranteed himself a lot more money, you know, and eliminated the risk of getting hurt this year. And he's got people out there on Twitter, you know, wishing ill on him. It's just so stupid.
Yeah, he's going to guarantee himself so much more money than he would have made this year when he signs that contract. And if he had played on the franchise tag this year and gotten hurt, he would have lost all of that. That's why he's doing. He's going to guarantee himself probably at least double what he would have made this year, probably even more than double what he would have made this year. Would you not do the same thing?
Yeah, and I mean, especially this is a guy that already has one ACL tear under his belt, I'm pretty sure. And people need to realize, these guys' careers, if you're good as a running back like Le'Veon Bell, you've got 10 years, maybe half of that on a big contract after your rookie contract, where you can make money. Can you imagine coming out of college and having 10 years to make enough money to support you and your family for the rest of your life? I mean, I'd do the same thing he did.
Yeah, I will never, 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 never understand. I mean, I can see where people are making the argument from, where that professional athletes make too much money. I can see where a misinformed person could make that argument. But professional athletes make the amount of money they make because they're worth that amount of money. It's simple. It's literally that simple.
Yeah, it's economics 101. I mean, there's a salary cap, so they're not even really paid as much as they're worth. They're paid less than they're worth.
it's easier to make an argument that pro athletes are underpaid than to make it the one that they're overpaid. In football, maybe not as much, but in basketball and hockey in particular, you could easily make that argument, and it's just nuts that people are thinking, oh, these guys make too much money. They're millionaires. What they can't do what they want. They can't act like the rest of us act because they're rich. Like they're rich relative to us. Yeah, but they gotta, like you said, with the exception of the best players in the league that make ridiculous amounts of endorsement money and hundreds of million dollars in a career, which in the NFL there's not very many of those, and almost all of them are quarterbacks. These guys have to, like you said, they have to have the money to live and support themselves and their family in the way they want to live for the next 40, 50 years. And that's what Le'Veon Bell's doing. And I would do the exact same thing if I were in his situation and had those athletic gifts.
Yeah, and I mean, NFL players, the top 1% of the top 1% of people that have ever played football. If we were that good at our professions, Nate, we'd be getting compensated ridiculously more compared to the average person as well. So, I don't know. That's probably enough for the economics lesson for now, and we can move on to our listener question, unless you want to add anything else here, Nate.
No, I mean, I could rant on that subject for a while, but I think it'll always come back to it. That would be a great off-season pod, so we'll have to come back to it when we don't have other stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I agree. I could talk about this all day. So, Joe in Boston gave us another excellent question here. He's asking about the 2017 NFL head coaching class, guys that were, well, not necessarily first-time head coaches, but, you know, hired in 2017, with the exception of Hugh Jackson, who's already out of a job, has a job with a new team now. So Joe asked this 2 weeks ago, how would we evaluate Vance Joseph, Anthony Lynn, Sean McDermott, Doug Marrone, Sean McVay, and Kyle Shanahan so far through a season and a half, and kind of coinciding with that, who's most at risk of losing their job and least at risk out of those six?
So I think the least at risk is the easy part of this. But I think this is a really interesting question, because we talk a lot about, and you and I specifically have talked, Alex, about how you need to give coaches at least 3 seasons. Before you make an up or down decision on them and see the direction they're heading after that third season. I'm going to start my argument here with the caveat that I don't think any of these guys should be fired during this season or after the season. I would hope that none of these guys are fired, because that would just be, in my opinion, the wrong thing for ownership to do.
Yeah.
But that being said, I think the safest coach argument is pretty easy to make. Would you agree with that, Alex?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Sean McVay is certainly the safest coach. I mean, he's turned Jared Goff into a really good quarterback. He's one of the best teams in the league, and they look to be pretty good for a long time. And he looks to be set up for success long term, as long as someone fixes their cap situation in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I was going to say, their cap situation's a little bit hairy going forwards, but I mean, they've got their core there, so even if they lose some of, you know, the other players on their roster, they're still going to have Goff, Gurley, Donald, Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks. Yeah, they're going to be good for a while, and, you know, if things don't go as well in a few years, it's not really Sean McVay's fault. I mean, he's probably the best offensive coach in the game right now. So I agree, he's definitely the safest for me. After that, I say the next safest is probably, I agree, none of them should be fired this year. Anthony Lynn is probably the safest, because the Chargers are really, really, really good.
Yeah, and I think it's very difficult. If your quarterback is Phillip Rivers, it's really hard to get fired.
Yeah.
You have to really mess up to get fired if your quarterback's Philip Rivers. So that's part of why. And I think the point that Joe made where this might not – once Rivers is gone, this can change quickly. I think that's a good point. But he's really – he's made the team a lot better since he's been there. I mean, that offense was – Rivers was – I mean, yes, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, but that offense was not doing great before Anthony Lynn got there.
Yeah, I definitely miss Anthony Lynn in Buffalo. You know, obviously he was going to get a head coaching job. I wish he was still, you know, calling the shots on offense. I think things could have been much different than they are now. But, you know, Joe does mention some other factors here that are out of Anthony Lynn's control. That, you know, the attendance is really bad for them. And there's high expectations for this team. And that's where Joe says, you know, things can go south quickly. You know, once Rivers, you know, eventually falls off the cliff. Which, he's an older quarterback, it could happen next year.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could. I think one thing that one thing too with that situation we have to be cognizant of is that the ownership situation in San Diego, or Los Angeles now, is kind of it's not the most tenable ownership situation. I mean, so Dean Spanos, who gave up control of the team to his kids, but he didn't give up control of the decision to move the team to Los Angeles. And then he moved to Los Angeles, and now they have no attendance, and they're playing in a soccer stadium. And they're not even going to play ever in their own stadium because they're not going to get one, because their old owner insisted that San Diego taxpayers pay for a new stadium for him. I think that kind of ownership situation, we can't discount that, given – and another good point he made with the ownership too is – Marty Schottenheimer got fired after they went 14-2. So, I mean, and yes, that was Dean Spanos who made that decision. I don't know.
Yeah, that's just insane to fire someone after 14-2. But I don't know. The Chargers seem to be in a better place organizationally, apart from, you know, the attendance issues and everything. But I think once they're sharing a new stadium with the Rams, right?
No, they're not. That's the thing.
Oh.
The Rams own that stadium. They are renting it.
Okay.
From the Rams.
So they'll be playing in the same stadium, right?
Yes, but it's not like New York. This is the thing that I don't understand about how the Chargers are ever going to make money. And this is why I think that this situation is doomed. And we could go I'll get back to the original question in just a second. But the Rams own the stadium. The Chargers are going to pay the Rams to play in their stadium, essentially. Because there's not an agreement like there is, it's not the same situation like New York, where the Jets and the Giants, they split advertising revenue from the stadium equally. That's not the same situation here in Los Angeles. Like, the Chargers, how are they going to make money?
Yeah, this sounds like they're heading straight into an Oakland Raiders problem, where they don't have enough money to put the guaranteed contracts into escrow. Like, the Raiders couldn't pay Khalil Mack, so they had to trade him.
Unless the NFL does, in this Chargers and the Rams, come to some sort of agreement to share advertising money or do something with the stadium, share revenues from the stadium, share concession revenues, however that's going to work, parking, however that whole situation. Unless they come to some sort of revenue sharing agreement, that's a long term. That situation is not going to work. But back to the original question here. Yes, I agree. I think Anthony Lynn is the next safest. I think if we're talking about safe right now and safe through the end of for this season alone, he's definitely the next safest. If we're talking like next 3 years, who's least likely to get fired? Maybe that changes, but right now, absolutely, he's the next safest.
Yeah, and I think after that, for me, it's Kyle Shanahan. Garoppolo went down early, and, you know, it's well known they've been in rebuilding mode since he got there last year. And, I don't know, you can't evaluate them too much. And they've been competitive. They don't get completely blown out every game. And I just think you have to see how Jimmy G plays out if he plays a full season. I think if he plays a full season next year and they're terrible record-wise, I could see him getting fired, but I still think he's got a couple years left at least to make a difference there.
No, I completely agree. I think that Shanahan has to get at least one full season with his quarterback before you can make a decision on him. And it's not that the 49ers don't have some other pieces. I mean, they have, especially this year, he's been the best tight end in football this year. And I don't think that's really even, I think he's been far and away the best tight end in football this year in George Kittle. And Marquise Goodwin has been a pretty good wide receiver in San Francisco.
Buffalo.
What's wrong with you? All the Bills wide receivers leave and they become pretty good. Like, Goodwin and Robert Woods are the two best examples of guys who weren't used properly in Buffalo and left, and suddenly they're good, and people like, and it's pretty obvious, oh, they went to a team who knows how to use them. But, so I think the 49ers, especially Shanahan's, the offensive-minded coaches, I think, have a way better chance of long-term success in the league.
Yeah, and so, Nate, we get more into the defensive coaches now, who are the three least safest that we have left. So who is the next guy up for you that's the safest out of, you know, McDermott, Marrone, and Vance Joseph?
I want to say it's McDermott. I really want to believe it's McDermott. I want to believe the Pegulas know what they're doing. And Brandon Bean knows what he's doing and is going to let this ride for at least two more seasons.
Yeah, I agree. I think they get at least two more seasons, I think, unless next year is just a complete disaster. I mean, they had to hit the hard reset button one of these years. They did it kind of backwards, where they didn't do it their first year in there. They went and tried to make the playoffs with the roster they inherited. And then they kind of blew things up. But this was needed. They needed to have a bad year, you know, and kind of strip this roster down and rebuild it. The defense is already good. You know, they have 10 draft picks, I believe, coming up in 2019. If they don't make some serious strides in 2019 and they end up, let's say, 4-12, 5-11, and Josh Allen plays terrible, then yeah, I can see an argument for firing Sean McDermott, because he is a defensive head coach, and there might be, you know, an incentive to bring in an offensive-minded guy to try to fix Josh Allen. But, I mean, that's looking into the Magic 8-Ball a little bit too much, I think, at this point.
Yeah, another thing with Buffalo is thinking about the GM situation, and this is another thing that plays into it for me with the ordering of these, is Brandon Bean did not hire Sean McDermott. So Brandon Bean is definitely not going to get fired first or even at the same time as McDermott does. He's going to be able to hire a head coach if McDermott doesn't work out. So McDermott is certainly first on the list of guys that are going to be gone in that scenario. And I think that does play a factor in it. And it plays a big factor to me with my decision between the next two guys on the rankings. The GM situation in Denver, I think John Elway gets to stay in Denver as long as he wants, unless he does something really, really bad. And that makes Vance, like, because John Elway's job is so safe, he can basically do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they've completely botched this quarterback situation. As good as Bradley Chubb is, the Broncos were in prime position to get a quarterback in this year's draft. And instead, they went with a two-year deal for Case Keenum, who was largely below average, dare I say, borderline terrible his whole career, with the exception of last year on a Super Bowl caliber Vikings roster. And shocker, he hasn't been that good in Denver with a terrible offensive coordinator and nowhere near the amount of talent as he had in Minnesota.
Yeah, and I think a big part of his struggles in Denver is they're not running an offense that suits him at all. And the offense in Minnesota was kind of built to his strengths. And that's, if you don't play around the quarterback's strengths, the quarterback is going to struggle. And we saw that in Buffalo. Buffalo fans know this pretty well. And for some reason, other teams in the league like to do the exact same thing.
Yeah, I don't get it. It seems to be a problem with offensive coordinators around the league, the older offensive coordinators, I should say, is in general, not always, is these guys have a system, and they try to make the players fit their system, instead of the other way around, where you tailor your system to the talent you have. And that's, I think Vance Joseph might end up being the fall guy here in losing his job because, one, they botched the quarterback situation, and two, because, you know, they're just terrible offensively as a coaching staff, I think, and that offense is getting older in general.
Yeah, the Broncos are another team in it. This is just an interesting situation. I mean, their defense is pretty good. You can't say the Chubb pick was bad, necessarily. I mean, he is like 8th in the NFL in sacks this year, and he's still on pace to break the all-time record for most sacks in a season by a rookie. And can't discount the. I mean, yeah, he's going to be a great player in the league. No, there's no doubt about that. But it's just crazy to me that Elway thought Case Keenum was the answer.
Yeah, I don't think he believed Case Keenum was the answer.
I guess I mean he thought Case Keenum could. It's crazy to me that he thought signing Case Keenum would make them a contender right now.
Yes.
Because he clearly expected them to be contending right now. And I don't understand the Case Keenum signing in that, looking at it through that lens.
Yeah, I agree, Nate. I think Elway's caught up in 2 or 3 years ago where that defense was downright dominant, and now they're not. You know, and they can't get away with having noodle-armed Peyton Manning out there like they did when they won the Super Bowl. The defense isn't that good. Their offensive skill position players are older or traded off the roster now in the case of Demaryius Thomas. So I think Vance Joseph ends up being the scapegoat here for kind of some managerial incompetence. And I don't know, maybe Vance Joseph just isn't cut out to be an NFL head coach. Maybe this is one of those rare cases where, well, not, I don't want to say rare, but inside 3 years where you're just like, yeah, this guy doesn't have it. It's not because you didn't give him enough time. It's just maybe this guy's cut out to be a defensive coordinator and not a head coach. I'm not familiar enough with Denver to know that, but this feels like it could be one of those cases like the Bills with Rex Ryan, where after 2 years it was like, yeah, we got to, you know, kind of stop the bleeding.
Yeah, and it's really tough, too. I think the Broncos are put in kind of a weird position. It's always tough, I think, in the league when you fire a black head coach, especially so soon after hiring them, given the push the league has made to hire more minority coaches.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Nate. And, you know, I think that could be something that's going on in Cincinnati, too, as well, where they, you know, kept Marvin Lewis around and he hasn't won a playoff game in 15 years. It's, I don't know, it's interesting. It's definitely a factor.
Yeah, and I think it's certainly fair to say that Vance Joseph could deserve to be fired, and it's certainly fair if Marvin Lewis got fired. I'm not saying it's not fair. But the issue is there are so few coaches because so many teams just don't consider qualified minority candidates, and firing one or two, it's reasonable that both those guys could get fired at the end of this year, honestly.
Yeah.
And there's not, I mean, it just puts the league, it makes the league look bad, and I think the owners know that. I think they do know that, and they do think about those. I would hope they think about those things, the way they run their business. And I imagine there's discussions around all that stuff between owners when they go in to make these kinds of decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Nate, we got one guy left on the list here, and that's Doug Marrone. Kind of put him as a tie with Vance Joseph. I mean, I don't know if it's completely Doug Marrone's fault that Tom Coughlin hitched his wagon to Blake Bortles for the next 2.5 seasons. Like you said, I think either last pod or the one before, there's kind of an easy out, but there were some quarterback options on a team that's ready to compete for the Super Bowl now. I think they would have won it last year if the quarterback was anyone other than Blake Bortles. And just in general, Doug Marrone's a terrible coach. We know that as Bills fans. The guy punts on 4th-and-1 from, like, a 37-yard line.
Yeah, Doug Marrone is a terrible in-game coach. And I think that's pretty obvious to most people that watch the game. He just doesn't believe. He apparently doesn't believe in math or reason. But He's not clearly knows what he's doing around a football team. He made Syracuse. He's turned Syracuse football around, and look at where they are. He started that, and look at where they are now. They're 12th in the country. Not he didn't get them to 12th, but he got them in the right direction. I think he got the Bills going in the right direction when he left. That he kind of left. It was so awkward the way he left. That's why Bills fans hate him, because the team was, I thought, and a lot of fans thought, was going in the right direction, and he just walked out the door. And didn't even walk. He just texted people and said he was leaving.
So many weird things in Buffalo, Nate.
Jacksonville's pretty. I agree with you, Alex. They were, outside of Blake Bortles, they were the best team in the NFL last year. But Blake Bortles made them not the best team, because when the quarterback's that bad, you're not going to win. But because of the fact that Marone didn't get to pick his quarterback, I think that's a good point, Joey, that you make, that makes him a little bit safer. But it seems to me that Marone has kind of lost the locker room. And I don't know if it's because of Bortles or if it's – but the locker room is not – that team is just not playing the way that they played. They're just not playing the way they played last year. And they have most of the same players.
Yeah. And, Nate, I honestly think I could name 50 – at least 50 NFL quarterbacks that are better than Blake Bortles.
I don't know about 50.
I think I could. We won't do it because this pod's running already at 50 minutes or so. But I'll come up with a list and send it to you, and I'll see if you agree that I can find 50 quarterbacks that are definitively better.
I'm gonna find as many quarterbacks that I can that are better than him, and I'll send you my list too. But I don't think it's gonna be 50. We will see. I think I could do 30.
Oh, easily, yeah.
I don't know about 50 though. Man, we'll try. I'll see what we can do.
So maybe that's Doug Marone's saving grace, is that there's 50 quarterbacks in the NFL better than his starter. I think that could be an argument for keeping him around, but just in general, he's not a good in-game NFL coach. So, Nate, this one's run pretty long. Anything else you want to add during the bye week here?
Let's hope that Josh Allen's elbow is fully healthy by next weekend.
Yeah, that about sums it up well, because otherwise we don't really have a reason to watch. So that brings us to an end of this episode of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am your co-host, Alex Pollinger.
And I am Nate Schreiber.
Subscribe, download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts, so it can help our ranking and help others find the show. Please do us a favor and share the pod with a friend this week. We thank Joe for sending us the question to give us some material for the podcast during the bye week. So feel free to send any questions, comments, topics you want us to cover. Twitter, @Bills_Breakdown, Facebook, @Bills Breakdown, or you can email us, BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.